by Satanic International Network. You're listening to The Ooze.
I'm on the cage. Every foul wicked spirit in the host, The Ooze.
20 minutes, Daniel Rolove on The Ooze. Right now.
On The Ooze, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
To really happen to have a serial current
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
All right, it's Sunday night, 10 p.m. Central Standard Time, Eastern Time, it's 11 p.m., and you were listening to The Ooze, the Outbreak Edition, with your host, T.C. Downey, and your co-host, Jason Sorrell. Slipping in here at the last possible minute. What's going on, T.C.? How you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right, Jay. How about you, man?
I'm doing all right. I think I got a little head cold going, so if I sound a little funny, just dealing with that. And other than that, just busy with the tattooing, busy with the, doing a little drawing and everything else, having a good time with the kids, and just usual stuff, man.
Right on, dude. Right on. Well, I might be joining you in that little bit of a cold department. My kid came home this weekend with a runny nose and an itchy throat. It looked like a sinus infection of some kind. But, you know, of course, being dad, I'm a sucker to kiss him whether he's sick or not. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He comes up to me and asks for a kiss. I just fuck it, do it. I can take vitamin C later.
Yeah, man. Well, that is the deal with kids, man, especially around this time of year. They all head off to school and everything else, and it's a germ factory, man. They pick up whatever they pick up from these other kids, especially the little ones. My six-year-old is in first grade and everything else. So, yeah, man, that shit just gets passed around, and you just deal with it and hope that whatever you got your shots or whatever, man, that it's good for whatever bug they're passing around. So, yeah,
right,
you don't put your kid inside because they're sick, man, but. Anyways, I'm assuming we're going to continue our conversation, but there's some interesting little things going on, and interesting, I guess, in kind of a off the wall way. And I'm verifying, doing some fact checking and everything else. I kind of wanted to kick this off with. Oh shit! Let me turn that off. Our friend Dark Fool. Maybe I should back up. Let me back up with this story a little bit. On YouTube, there's a guy who's called Ivor Cornuda, and this dude is, I think he's from Canada, and the dude posts, you know, a variety of different videos on his channel, public domain videos, and what he's doing is he's actually established kind of a YouTube channel. That's what he does, and he's, you know, putting all this, you know, all this stuff out there that, just archiving all this stuff that's hard to find. It comes from different countries. It's horror movies, stuff related to Satanism and everything else. And that's his thing. That's what he does. And recently he put out a video where he kind of decries basically the Satanists on YouTube. And he sets a bunch of examples he provides. He talks about how you've got Satanists who are just talking about the philosophy, that they have no interest in actually talking about or discussing what they actually do as Satanists, but just, you know, the philosophy where they, you know, the ideas they have and the debate and discuss the philosophy, some stuff that we've kind of done before ourselves here on The Ooze and other places. Ivor, anyways, he names Venus Satanist, he names Bender Satanist as three people in particular that he sees kind of doing this, having this discussion. And I think I got named because I talked about, I hyped Dark Fool, a friend of ours, well, former co-host here on The Ooze. I hyped his Middle Path project, and I actually stepped up and shot a video where I asked Dark Fool a series of questions about what he has going on with the Middle Path, you know, what his ideas are based on, you know, my cursory understanding of what it was he's trying to accomplish. And he shot a video so far, just one video, kind of responding to a few of the questions I had, and I had a whole list, so he's going to be, I'm hoping, getting to another video and shooting this other video. But anyway,
there's two parts on that channel, man.
There's two parts now?
Yeah, there has been. He uploaded them both together. You probably only caught one of them, but...
Oh, I'll have to check it out. Okay, so he's probably wondering why I haven't responded yet. He's probably wondering what the hell.
FYI, there's another video.
All right. Well, Ivor, one of the things he did is at the end of this video where he's talking about how you've got all these Satanists on YouTube who are, talking the talk, basically, and debating one another, bitch-slapping each other and everything else. You know, it's back and forth. He's like, you know, if you're going to be a Satanist, the last place you want to go to learn about Satanism is YouTube, because you see this kind of thing going on. And Satanism is about manifesting something. Or, you know, I don't think Ivor used those actual words, but doing something. Ivor had shot a video, I think, maybe a few months ago, where he asked other Satanists to kind of present their hobbies, what it is they do, what they're into. That's more interesting to Ivor than debates about philosophy and stuff like that. Now, my YouTube response is basically that, you know, philosophy, debate, discourse can be a person's hobby just like his video collection is. But at the end of Ivor's video, he takes a shot at Dark Fool, okay? He puts on a jester's hat. He kind of holds his hands up, you know, right hand, left hand, and then kind of just shrugs his shoulders, all right? And he's taking a shot. He's, you know, he's mocking Dark Fool, basically. Dark Fool suggests, you know, you've got a right-hand path, you have a left-hand path, and he brings his hands together kind of aggressively, and he goes, this is where he is, the middle path, or whatever. You know, that's his thing. In my response, I made sure to, you know, to mention Dark Fool, Avenger Satanus, a whole list of people that I thought that Ivor was talking about, that Ivor hadn't mentioned but alluded to, sounded like he was referring to this person or that person in my mind. Anyways, Dark Fool has actually responded with a video response that is nothing short of genius, in my opinion. It is just that hilarious, just that good. So what I'm doing here real quick, let me go ahead and grab it. I'm going to post the link in the chat room. And this is all for just a good chuckle. And one of the things I think about Satanists, or about people who have this kind of philosophical leaning that we all share, you have to have a sense of humor. You have to be ready to laugh, and you have to be ready to laugh at yourself. And if you're not equipped to do so, well, then you're not going to do well with this particular philosophical perspective. Sooner or later, you're going to get butthurt. You're basically going to get upset about something that somebody says, or that, you know, a viewpoint that's different than yours, and that's going to be the end of it. You're not going to be able to maintain whatever your perspective is, because, you know, you'll have to fall back on something else. So there's the link in the chat room for the folks who want to check that out. That is the link to Dark Fool's new video, and he links Ivor's video in it as well, so Ivor's getting a little bit of promotion out of that. You kind of see what's going on. But it is just a parody of Ivor's original video, so check that out.
Right, I'll have to wait until about 1 o'clock in the morning myself to actually be able to watch it. But in the meantime, I hope everybody else enjoys it.
Okay, so, and it's kind of interesting that we've got Ivor Canuta, calling out the other Satanists on YouTube, you know, basically saying, what is it that you people are doing? What is it you people are manifesting or trying to accomplish? He doesn't use the word term manifesting. That seems to be closer to our circle here, you know, with Satanic International Network and the ONA or whatever. We talked about what is it we're doing. There's another character out there. I shouldn't say character. You know, I don't have anything negative to say about this guy. Ron French, Reverend Ron. He's also posted a video here in the last couple of days. Matter of fact, he posted it yesterday. Satanic Stratification 2011. So if you guys haven't been doing your YouTube homework, I guess you're getting your fill of it tonight. And this is because I just happened to check all this stuff out between tattoos today. He's basically making the same comments. He's saying basically, you know, what is it that these cats, and he actually lists links to Zach Black's YouTube channel, my YouTube channel, TC Downey's YouTube channel, Jason King's YouTube channel, Dark Fool's YouTube channel, and Venture Satanus's YouTube channel. So what is it about these cats, these guys, that is special, that is in any way worth worthy of people's attention? And I find myself often wondering that as well. You know, what is it about what the hell we got going on that makes us any better or any different than, you know, anybody else that's out there? And he kind of answers his own question through the video. Revron says basically that the thing that makes us really different from everybody else is that we actually get out there and talk about this shit. We put ourselves out there, whereas everybody else just kind of sits back and listens or sits back and lets us, you know, lets us do the talking or whatever. His video is a good part of it. It's a little bit of self-promotion, which is fine. Same with Ivor's video. It's self-promotion. Ron goes on and talks about how he's actually trying to accomplish something. He's actually trying to manifest something. And with his Access Sanctuary thing, the church thing he's trying to do and everything. And he's, you know, it's I guess it's a fair comment. You know, instead of just discussing Satanism from the viewpoint of, you know, several thousand years ago, or he says, he points out in his video, he has no interest in politics or the economy or the stuff that we talk about here on the news necessarily, that he has his own thing going or whatever. But his thing is he's actually trying to make something happen in the real world. And he looks at people like you, you know, TC or myself, and, you know, he sees basically, first of all, that it seems that we're always switching identities. We're always taking a different tack, in his opinion. That we're inconsistent on what it is we're pursuing. Now, I would disagree. I would say that there's a kind of an evolution. There's a progression. We're moving from one thing to the next to the next. But there is a line of consistency there. But he points out that he's been doing the same Reverend Ron Access Sanctuary kind of thing for years. Okay, and so he's more consistent than some of the people that he's, you know, he's addressing with his video. The other thing is that he wants to, you know, points out that, you know, we haven't accomplished anything really. At least, you know, I'm assuming, you know, in his opinion, we haven't accomplished anything. And building websites doesn't count. Building any type of social networks does not count. Building, you know, a radio show doesn't count. Writing books and putting them on Lulu doesn't count. And when he's, you know, when he says these things, he says because anybody can do it. Anybody that wants to can go out and make that kind of thing happen. It's not hard to have a blog talk radio show. It's not hard to you know, put a book on Lulu. It's not, you know, I agree with all that. It's not hard to build a website. It's not hard to build a social network. You know, I agree with all of that. But the point he made originally in the video was between everybody else and people like the folks that they listen to this video, the difference is these people actually are doing these things, whereas most people do not. Most people do not choose to invest their time or energy into those things. The thing is with this video is he kind of contradicts himself in another video he put out recently, Satanism 102, A Perspective, where he points out that Satanism, as he understands it from a Levitate perspective, is all about you. It's all about who you are, what you're doing, what you're trying to manifest, what you've got going on. So if that's the case, if it's all about you, it's all about what you're doing and everything else, well, then it doesn't matter what Reverend Ron thinks about what's being manifested by any of these other people he's discussing. It only matters to them whether they think they're accomplishing anything or not. If you watch the video, and I'm going to link to that too. I'll put that in there because, you know, we like Reverend Ron.
Two videos to watch now.
Yeah. So we'll put it in there. And then, you know, I thought about this too, man. I thought about, you know, usually when I do something like this, I don't sit there and I'm not trying to be overly critical. You know, that's the other thing I'm trying to do. You notice I'm not, there's not the smart ass bullshit that I usually put out on my videos or anything else when I'm going to talk shit about somebody. I'm trying not to be overly critical or whatever. I think he's a little bit wrong. And I think, you know, basically on his assessment, I think he's a little bit wrong. While I would agree that it's helpful to have something you're trying to do, to have something you're trying to accomplish. But just like Ivor, just because you're into X, Y, and Z, and these other people aren't doing what you're doing to accomplish X, Y, or Z, does not mean that they don't have some goal, something they're trying to manifest, and that they aren't moving in that direction. You just have different ideals, different perspectives. I mean, that's what, you know, you're a Satanist. You should have your own thing that you're trying to do. You shouldn't be, you know, catering to somebody else's demands or needs or whatever.
I'm just curious, Jason, before we get too far off of this here, how would he know what we're doing, or if we're not doing anything. I mean, just because these are the only aspects of our actual, actions that he can see tangibly, doesn't mean there isn't other things going on.
Well, and I said that to Ivor, too, in my video response to him, that he looks at my one YouTube channel and thinks all I do is talk about, you know, philosophy or politics or whatever, however you want to look at it. Now, that's all I do. And I had to point out to him that, you know, hey, look, man, here's the other YouTube channel that you're not seeing where the exact thing you asked about, my tattooing and my artwork, here's where I present some of that stuff. Here's the website where I present some of that stuff. Here are the blogs where I talk about, you know, tooling around here in Austin, all that stuff, man. You know, the artwork, the tattooing, you're tattooing from two different perspectives, all that stuff. Here's where to go find it. Here's where you didn't look. Now, Ron, on the other hand, is somebody who's, you know, he's done his homework. So, and when you watch this video, you'll kind of see what's going on here. Ron is actually saying, the real question of his video is not so much what is it you're manifesting, TC, or what is it that I'm doing as Jason Sorrell? What is it, you know, what is it about that? What is it we got going on? He's not asking us that. He puts the question to the people who listen to us, to the people that he sees as kind of following what we do or taking interest in what we got going on. And he's putting the question to them. He's saying, why are you interested in these people, A, and B, which it's there, but he doesn't say this directly. The second question is, why aren't you paying attention to Reverend Ronald French? Because he points out he's actually trying to manifest something. He's actually trying to accomplish something he considers tangible, okay? So he's like, what makes
right.
him, you know, he sees himself as different from the rest of us, and that his end goal or whatever it is he's trying to accomplish is tangible. It's something that he sees as a tangible goal. I agree. It is a tangible goal. He wants actual buildings where people can actually come and do their thing. Since these are his things, this is the things he's doing, why aren't people, you know, flocking to his channels or his process or whatever? I think, you know, the difference between, you know, at least for my thing, with the difference between Ivor and myself, and the difference between Reverend Ronald French and myself, is, and I state this in the video response to Ivor, you know what, if a handful of people are listening to this radio show, or if a handful of people are listening to YouTube, watching the thing on YouTube or whatever, there's only a certain number of people whose opinions actually concern me. And while I'm always looking for, to add to that list, while I'm always looking for more people whose opinions are of interest to me, I don't care if 100 people listen to the show or 10 people listen to the show. I don't care if, you know, 2 people watch my video or 2,000 videos or 2,000 people watch my video. That's not my intention. My intention is purely with these forums, just the expression. Now, it's absolutely gratifying when people listen to these shows. It's gratifying to get email from people who sit there and say, hey, I heard what you said on Blog Talk Radio, and I agree, or I'm concerned, or what is it you're doing? What else do you got going on? And I think that's kind of something we're going to be talking about a little bit later on here in the show when we get back on topic. It's gratifying. It's definitely, and I appreciate, and I do have something to say, and I'm hoping it has an impact on people. But if it doesn't, you know, if I only get a few people to sit there and say, hey, you're wrong about this, and this is why, well, then it's an opportunity for me to learn. So I appreciate that so many people have found these little infomercials, these little infotainment processes, the Flaw Talk Radio on YouTube. I appreciate that so many people have found it entertaining and edifying and educational or whatever. But I'd rather have people go. I dig it when people go, you're wrong, and this is why, and then I have an opportunity to kind of discuss that with them and maybe learn something.
I'm with you.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, dude.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, dude, I'm completely with you on, you know, it doesn't really make a difference if it's fucking 2 people or it's 2 billion people. It's all about expression. It's all about actually creating something and doing something. I mean, it's as simple as this is, it's not so simple. You know, to carry on for two years or so. I mean, I've been doing Blog Talk Radio shows alone for, since 08 now, right? Yeah.
Right.
07 or 08, yeah. So I've been doing this shit for a while, and I mean, it gets tiring after a while, trying to think of different things to talk about, trying to keep your opinions consistent. I mean, I don't know if people on an everyday basis realize how much just your opinion alone changes over the shape of a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, this is, for me, I mean, I know it's the same for you. It's just another matter of creating. It's the same reason I paint, the same reason I write, the same reason I draw, do Photoshop work, whatever. It's a release of whatever we're, you know, I'm actually doing at that point in time. It's a release of my thoughts. So, you know, this shit's definitely not for everybody else. And so on that, I would say, to Ron French, when he gets to listen to this, who the fuck are you? You know, why do I have to do anything at all, you know, to satisfy you? So.
Well, and this is the thing, okay? On that point, you know, when he's talking about, several points he makes are, I do agree with. Like in his Satanism 102 video, he points out, again, that Satanism is about who you are, what it is you're doing, what it is you want to accomplish, that kind of thing. It's all about you. So to ask the question in his other video, the Satanic Stratification 2011 video, why are these guys worth the attention? You know, that suggests that he recognizes it, he acknowledges it, that there's this, you know, that Satanism is about you. He's, you know, still kind of not fully embraced in it. He doesn't fully grasp that concept. Then the other point he made is that that as Satanists, maybe you should be doing something. Same with what Ivor said. As a Satanist, whatever it is you're doing, maybe you should be doing it. And this is my point on that. And for a long time, I've talked about how if somebody came up to me and said, hey, you're a Satanist, I'm a Satanist too, one of the first things I do is say, oh, you're a Satanist? What do you do? What is it what are you doing? What are you trying to accomplish as a Satanist? What is it that you're, what, you know, what else you got going on? I mean, look at and Boyd Rice, you know, I'm not going to say this guy's a hero of mine, but he's somebody that I admire. You know, Boyd Rice, you know, he does his music, he's into tiki lounges, he's doing all kinds of little things that are all about, you know, what Boyd Rice wants to do. And Satanism just happens to be the philosophy that kind of expresses that ideal, that it's all about what Boyd Rice wants to do. The same with me. When Ron French goes, what is it you've accomplished? Well, shit, man, I'm a tattoo artist. I went to college for art school. You know, I make artwork all the time. I got three beautiful children. I've got a relationship I've been in for now 8 years that, you know, that's wonderful. You know, talk about manifesting your fucking will. You know, I've moved the fuck out of Indiana. I live in Texas right now. And I'm not talking about building a chapel or anything. But, you know, for me, for my personal manifestation, for the journey that I'm on, and he expresses this as well, that we're all on a particular journey, for the journey that I'm on, well, I'm pretty much, I'm satisfied that I'm doing exactly what it is that I've been setting out to do. So, you know, it might not be, again, yeah, it might not be building a chapel. It might not be doing whatever. And all, you know, all the other shit, you know, the books I've written. You know, I wrote a book because I wanted to fucking write a book, which, by the way, if you check those books out on Lulu.com, look up, yeah, look at just on Lulu, search fucking Sorrell, S-O-R-R-E-L-L, check that out. I ranted in about a year ago. He talks about things, the inconsistencies. I ranted about a year ago about how I didn't want to put out digital copies of my book because I was tired of the piracy, tired of the copyright issues and everything else. So I figured if they were just hard copy, well then, you know, fuck it. I wouldn't have to worry about piracy as much, right? Well, I went to digital copies, and happened to come to digital copies just as the iPad and the Kindle thing were really starting to take off. And Lulu made this available. So now, not only is it fucking, not only are copies of my book available in a digital format, but it's selling at a ridiculous rate. And it's just me going off about shit. It's just me talking shit, just like I do here on YouTube or whatever. But people are paying $1, $2 a pop to read what I have to say. And I guess there's a sucker born every minute. I guess is where I'm going with that. But
yeah, man, it just goes to show now everybody's concerned about holding hands and tolerating each other. Some of us actually want to do shit we enjoy.
Right. I think that's the thing that Ivor missed out with his video. that what we're doing right now, you know, Blog Talk Radio, what we do on YouTube, the shit talking back and forth, the occasional bit of drama that we, you know, we engage in, which, you know, I try to avoid it now as much as possible, but the occasional bit of drama we engage in, well, we do it because we like it. We do it because it's fun. We do it because that's how we choose to express ourselves. That's how we choose to manifest our will. And, you know, when Jason King puts out a video where he's talking about, you know, the differences between, you know, the left-hand path and right-hand path and how it developed in India thousands of years ago, you know, I don't care what anybody else says about that shit. To me, that shit is fucking interesting. You know, I dig right into that. And it's when people go, I don't see the relevance. You know, that's I've watched the Reverend Ron video. But he's like, I don't see the relevance. Well, how is that relevant to what's going on here now today? Well, apparently you missed the point of the video because it totally has everything to do with the debate between the left-hand path and right-hand path and all that other bullshit as of today because it gets back to the core of what it's about. So, yeah, and I'm plugging a bunch of people and everything else. And we're 30 minutes into the show. If you want to call in, 347-989-1371 is the call-in number. We'll be glad to hear what you have to say on any fucking thing we're talking about tonight. And this kind of has... Go ahead.
Oh, I'm just beside myself. I guess apparently I was too busy doing nothing to realize that there was even this video out there. So,
it
just tickles me fucking pink, dude.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, this is the other thing to think about this. Okay, before anybody gets all shitty with Reverend Ronald French, okay... like I said, I disagree with his point. The video is more about self-promotion. It's like Ivor's video. Ivor Cornuda's video was more about self-promotion. It's a big commercial about what he's doing, and you're just contrasting with what everybody else is doing. And that's what Reverend Ronald French is doing. He's just, you know, he's presenting this video as here's what I'm doing in contrast to what everybody else is doing. There may have been a better way to go about it. I don't know. But he does list, again, Zach Black, Satanic International, Jason Sorrell, individualist, you know, the letter I, when he's talking about the letter I in his video, that's who he's referring to. T.C. Downey, B. Zeno, Jason King, we all know and love Jason King, The Dark Fool, Venger Satanist. The fact that he took the time to list and link all these characters says that while he looks at these people and goes, what are they doing? Well, they're doing enough to get his attention.
Right, so, and I guess so that he's answered his own question.
right. So, but yeah, don't be too hard on Reverend Ron. You know, he's got a bunch of different things going on, and he comes at different subjects from a bunch of different angles. So I think every once in a while it gets a little muddled. You know, Satanism is about who you are and yourself and everything else, and what you're trying to manifest. And he is trying to manifest something where it's, you know, more collaborative and everything else, and it's kind of alongside that whole thing. So, yeah, I'm not going to come down. I'm not going to be too hard. Like I said, I'm not going to be too harsh on Reverend Ron. I'm probably not even going to shoot a video response to it. I wanted to say it here on the news because occasionally he pops in here and listens. So I was actually hoping to catch him in the chat room tonight and, you know, get him to call in or whatever and we talk about it a little bit.
Right, but
he's obviously not here. So,
You know, man, I'm right there with you. It's not like I'm going to beat up on Frenchie either. I mean, I personally like the dude regardless of his antics. I mean, I can't expect anything less from somebody who has to carry a prefix to their name, so.
Right. Well, I like it. I guess I attribute it to we're all on a different learning curve, too. So, you know, there's some things where we have a more natural or more direct grasp of an idea, a more inherent grasp of an idea than others. And, you know, Ron's got, you know, I'm sure loads of information on things that I have no clue about, ideas and perspectives that I'm nowhere near as developed as he is on these points. But on this one thing, you know, I have to kind of go, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with Reverend Ron on this. So anyways, when we rolled out last Sunday, we talked about how we kind of hinted or we suggested we were going to talk tonight about we've been talking about this take action idea about how it's a good idea for people to start thinking about what they need to do to put some distance between themselves and the system, what they need to do to become less reliant on the usual pattern of things as we've known them because we see, you know, we hear it in the wind or whatever that
these patterns are going to change. They're going to change possibly abruptly. And when these patterns change, you know, patterns I'm talking about, like, there'll be food at the grocery store for you to purchase every week, or there'll be gas at the gas station for you to fuel up your car, or that your money that you can, you know, use to go out and purchase things right now will be worth a shit. These kinds of patterns changing. There's a definite possibility, and it seems to be becoming more and more clear that it's going in that direction every day.
I'm actually thinking Greece is right now there, if not almost there.
Right, right. And I mean, yeah, the heart of civilization, basically, you know, Western civilization, at the very least, Athens, you know, Greece is in total turmoil. They're in economic turmoil. And, you know, part of that came from, you know, I don't know, I'm just pulling numbers out of my ass now, but 95% of the population having a government job and being guaranteed a retirement and a pension and, you know, every little fucking thing. And, well, you know, the money wasn't there. So now their economy is taking a big shit. And all these people who were expecting to have, you know, every little thing handed to them, it's not there anymore. So we talked about how we kind of wanted, we've been talking for weeks now about things you could do, things that we are trying out to try to put some distance between ourselves and the system so that if tomorrow the regular safety nets that we have, you know, the local grocery store, the power grid, the water utilities, all those things, if tomorrow those things went away or were somehow hampered or severely restricted, that we could still continue on or maybe even, you know, move away from the shit and be relatively self-sufficient, be a little bit better off, be able to sustain ourselves and our families. And we've been talking about different strategies, but I think tonight we wanted to talk about, we talked about how we see certain things going on. Well, we want to talk maybe about what those things are, you know, what things we see going on around us that lead us to this conclusion that we need to start, you know, taking some steps, taking action to kind of prepare.
Right on.
So,
waiting for the next talking point, man.
Okay. Well, you mentioned Greece. And I was, you know, in preparing for the show while I was doing this, I didn't even think about Greece. I pretty much stayed within our own borders. What do you know, man? I mean, what do you want to say about Greece?
Well, as far as I understand, I mean, they're completely bankrupt, financially desolate, and I mean, every idea that we function on comes from, you know, the ancient Greek civilization, you know, the Roman structure. I mean, a lot of that ideology, the democracy, capitalism, all that kind of stuff, that stuff arose during that, you know, the height of that empire. So, I mean, to me, it's indicative of a wave that we're about to see set off, kind of like a tsunami. Jesus Christ, tripping over my tongue. I mean, I even kind of assume that, you know, the shit would start there, and just because, well, that's, I mean, it's the center of the modern world, whether we, you know, want to agree with it or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's things we're talking about. I mean, you got a group of people now living in a country where their money, you know, is ruthless. It's worthless. You can't buy shit with Greek money now. But these people have nothing to do, so they're starving in fresh air. Basically, they have all the time in the world on their hands to do whatever they want with, but they have no means to do anything to secure the things they need. They have no means of going out and getting food. They have no means of going out and getting fresh water. At least, you know, not the means that they were used to aren't there anymore. The stores don't have,
yeah,
you know, the stores don't have the food. The bakeries don't have the bread. You know, these things aren't available to them anymore. So,
you know, I was having a conversation. I'm sorry to cut you off, Chase, but
go ahead, man.
I was having a conversation over the past couple of weeks with Diavolo. You know, the dude who comes in here and chat under the name Nine sometimes.
Right on.
We were talking about Greece as they were entering into their pending doom. And one of the points that he made was, well, you know, the country's completely bankrupt. And I was like, well, you know, by all rights, all they got to do is just stick their finger up and go, fuck you, and keep going. I mean, they have to have a certain amount of natural resources within within their country themselves. So it's not like, you know, all the ground's famine, all the fucking rivers have turned to, you know, some sour water or something. You know, the livestock's not rotting. What it is just this, like, hinged fucking connection to this system, this dependency on something that's completely failed you, and yet at the same point, you know, your own complacency is the only thing that's keeping you from thriving.
Right. They lack the will to do for themselves, and those who have the will lack the knowledge that things that were considered commonplace knowledge 50, 60 years ago about, you know, growing your own food, about raising animals, about, you know, what's edible out in the woods, that kind of thing, is not common knowledge anymore. So, you know, and it means that, you know, if you're what you're going to do today means you're going to be watching television and the power goes out, and the idea of cracking open a book is a foreign concept to you, well, you're going to be fucked for entertainment, basically. And this is what I think they're facing in Greece, is they're facing this, that you're absolutely right. All they got to do is it leaves the cities. And the cities, I'm sure, is where it's the harshest. I mean, with the Great Depression here in the United States, it was the cities where it was really felt.
I didn't even think that they need to go that far, Jason. All they need to do is go, okay, I owe you money. So what? Come take it. And just go on doing what they're doing. I mean, it's not like all the... It's not like all the goldsmiths got up and moved out of the country. It's not like all the doctors got up and left, too. It's not like there's nobody left with resources or skills. All they have to do is just say, you know, fuck the rest of the world. We're going to continue going on.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah, I see what you're saying. If they were to collectively stand up and do that, absolutely. I think the problem there is that every resource chain has a beginning. So, you know, if we're talking about the baker just getting up in the morning and making bread, you know, he's going to get up and make bread and fuck whether he's going to get if the money's going to be worth anything, he's going to trade bread for other things he needs. Okay, so he's going to bake the fucking bread. Well, he has to have the bread, he's got to have the flour. And the flour has to be processed at a mill. You know, it has to be moved from the mill by truck or by cart or whatever the fuck it is. So there's this chain where somebody at the beginning of the chain, whether it's the farmer producing the wheat or whatever, has to go, fuck it, I need bread, so I need to make sure the baker gets this wheat so that I can get fucking bread. It's a rudimentary thing, and I think what we see going on right now in Greece and what we're going to see happen pretty much everywhere else is nobody has the will to go, fuck it, turn their back on the processes that we're used to, and do their own thing. Instead, we're going to be demanding that, you know, the money becomes worth something again, and that we're able to go back to our cubicles and do whatever the fuck it is we do for whatever bullshit reason that we do it. Now, I guess that brings me to the idea of what's going on. Have you heard about the Occupy Wall Street movement that's going on right now?
I have been watching it up until this past few days. As you know, the past few days have been kind of hilly for me, so I haven't been able to take a look. Is there anything new that's developed over the past few days?
Well, the news broadcasts are suggesting that about 500 people have been arrested, 500 to 700 people have been arrested over the last couple of days when the Occupy Wall Street movement moved to the Brooklyn Bridge, moved off of the walkways, and started impeding traffic. So those who were impeding traffic were arrested. Supposedly, according to the OccupyWallStreet.org website, the numbers of people who were arrested were much smaller than 500 to 700 people, and they're being arrested and then let go and given a summons or whatever. So they have to show up in court, you know, pay a fine probably, which, you know, again, there you go. How are you going to get money from somebody who doesn't have it, that kind of thing? The Occupy Wall Street movement, I think, is interesting because you've got a group of people who have they've taken to the streets, and arguably these are people who either, and this is what's interesting about this, they either don't have jobs already, you know, they're students, they're living at home with mom and dad or whatever, or they are secure enough in whatever it is they do that they don't need to go to work. So the middle class is pretty much totally left out of this, although you have people from unions and everything else who are going there to support this now. You have people, you know, who are taking time off of work to be down there. And on DangerousMinds.net, they're actually saying that if you're in New York and you want to go have lunch, go have lunch in the park. That way your numbers are added to, you know, at any given time, the numbers that are going on there. But they've established a little community down there on near Wall Street. I forget what the name of the park is that's down there. They have a kitchen. They have a stage for bands. They have a media resource center. They have a library. They have a little clinic set up. They have all kinds of. I mean, it's a little village. People have set up tents, and they're occupying, you know, that area. They're occupying that block. They're calling it. I forget what the name of the town is. Liberty Square is what they're calling it now. Their little village. It's kind of like the Burning Man thing. I forget what the name of the Burning Man city is that they put up every year. But it's like, you know, Burning Man's happening in New York. And what's interesting is that this idea of just going to the, you know, going to the public park, the public square in downtown, whatever, Boston, Chicago, wherever it's at, pitching tents and just being there, doing your thing, it's catching on. It is moving to Boston. It is moving to Chicago. Things are, you know, it's picking up. More and more people are getting involved in this kind of thing. The only issue I see with it, and it's an issue I pointed out with other such movements, is that there doesn't appear to be a consistent or solid message other than we're disappointed with the way things are being ran, we're tired of corporations seeming to have the majority of the resources and the major voice in government instead of the people. So it's all these disparate viewpoints. You've got environmentalists. You've got the Tea Party people are showing up. The union people are showing up. All these different people are showing up, but they're all showing up to say, hey, we're tired of, you know, corporations basically being in charge, and we want the people to have the power again.
Right on.
Go ahead.
This is what pisses me off about mankind in general. Is we're too afraid to say what it is that we're really fucking bothered by. Either that or we just are too stupid to actually realize what the problem is. You know, even if all the corporations, quote unquote, go away tomorrow, we're still in this issue of we're dealing with what our real core problems are.
Right.
You know, we don't get along. We won't get along. There's no way in hell that these mass, quote unquote, metropolis style cities are ever going to be the right thing for mankind.
Right, that's one of the issues I have with this Occupy movement, is that they're not calling for, change in the way that we currently do things, but they don't see that the system itself is inherently flawed. They don't see the process, they don't see that the processes we currently use are inherently flawed. They want a bigger voice in the system. They want a bigger representation in the chain of events that they already see is fucking them. It's that way. It's like, you know, it's like going to the person that's fucking the ass and saying, hey, while you're fucking me, could you at least say my name? You know, that kind of thing is what's going on.
Like, could you use this warming lotion?
Right. Rub my shoulders while you're doing it. I don't know. But yeah, it's a good, in theory it's good, but there's of course the issue of, you know, unintended consequences. So you get the corporations out of the government process. You create new laws so that only certain dollar amounts can actually be contributed only by certain entities, that corporations can't contribute. Well, they're going to find another way to funnel the money into the system. And then you just open it up for the unions now. So now you're going to have the unions controlling of, which for some of these people, that's a good thing. For some of these people, it's a bad thing. But you have the unions then determining the voice. You know, when it's just like, the thing is these people are living in the exact manner that you and I would say would be the right way to live. You showed up someplace. You got together with your friends and neighbors. You pitched some tents. You set up some resource centers. You started collectively gathering food and gathering resources and sharing and distributing those resources amongst your little community, and you didn't need any government, any kind of higher intervention for you to do those things and get along and make something happen. You know, that's I think the Occupy movement. They'd wake up and go, "Fuck it, we don't even need to deal with these assholes. That'd be awesome."
I mean, and that would be, in my eyes, the end-all, be-all goal of this whole Occupy Wall Street movement, is that that realization that life goes on regardless of what any external force tries to say. I mean, short of actually putting you in a life or death situation, you know, there's not really anything that they can do to enforce it.
Right, right. Yeah, it doesn't. This I guess the thing that people, you know, it's harsh, but the issue is people with power have the guts. Okay, they're the ones who can enforce the laws, but they represent 1% of the population or less. So if everybody tomorrow said, "Fuck it, I'm not going to work. I'm not going to go deal with that bullshit. I'm not going in, and I'm not ever going back. I'm going to go." It would be a better use of my time to go till the earth and grow my own food than to go to work tomorrow. What are they going to do? You know, there isn't shit they can do. There's not enough fucking bullets for them to deal with that. So they would just have to, the people in power would just have to accept that they were no longer in power.
Yeah, it's what they referred to as a mutiny back in the days of the pirates.
Right, right. Yeah, when the captain realized the whole crew was saying, "Fuck you, buddy, you're no longer in charge." Well, guess what? You're no longer in charge. You know, you accept your new station as, you know, mop boy or whatever.
Yeah,
you get in the dinghy and you take your chances on the open seas. Exactly. If you're even given that option. Some other shit is going on. You know, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just chuckling because the irony of it is it's just such a huge, I don't know, display of what human nature really is. I mean, everybody makes little sheeple jokes and everybody points at everybody else and calls each other followers, but the whole thing of it is when you sit and actually look, you know, you're all guilty of it, myself included at some points.
Right. Well, this is kind of in the lines of that. We were talking about this economic professor from India in the 1950s who talked about, he made a distinction, and I don't have the guy's name here in front of me, and I should have had this, you know, but I know the conversation was going to go in this direction. He has this theory that there are four different classes of people. You have a warrior class, you have an intellectual class, you have a political or business class, and then you have workers. And he predicted just what we see going on, whether you're talking about the Arab Spring or what they're calling the American Fall or the American Autumn or whatever, where the workers are going to rise up and the workers are going to demand a change in the system, a change that is more benefit, gives them more voice, gives them more whatever. But then once the workers had basically equalized to their satisfaction the processes in the system, they were going to go back to being workers and letting the warrior class, the intellectual class, or the political class rule over them again. And that this is the cycle that we see ourselves in, that it's going to continue to go this way until enough people wake up and go, you know, we don't need this process. Where, you know, you're going to have the workers demand certain, they're going to make certain demands where they're dissatisfied, get those demands met, and then go back to being slaves. So the issue here is, you know, a slave rebellion isn't where we need to be, isn't what we need to do, because at the end of the day, if you rebel and get better work conditions as a slave, you're still enslaved. Your people need to realize
right.
That you are free. You're free already. All you have to do is choose it. All you have to do is be willing to take that risk, be willing to take the responsibility for your freedom, and, you know, you can cut yourself loose.
That's exactly it, man. I mean, I can't imagine how many fucking, you know, 20 to 30-year-olds are turning gray worrying about their credit card debt and shit. You know, imagine if they just said, fuck you guys.
Right,
you know,
right,
it,
yeah.
I'm just saying that kind of surge in the court systems would cause a collapse all by itself. If everybody just between the age of 20 and 30 said, you know what, I'm not paying this shit. I'm not killing myself anymore. Make me do it.
Right.
There aren't enough people out there to fucking enforce it.
Right, right. They were, yeah, they're saying, you know, fuck you and your credit score. You know, if you're telling me that I can't buy that house because my credit score isn't fucking low enough, well, fuck it. you don't get my money then. I'll go do what I got to do. And I'm not going to deal with that anymore. And you're going to start having people that are going to go, you know, fuck it. What's a credit score? It doesn't mean shit to me. You know, if you want to buy the house, I got a house to sell. Here it is. And that'll be the end of it. But yeah, it's the shit's coming down. And I mean, it's funny how there are people who, you know, 50, 60 years ago were predicting that this is the direction we are going in. You know, from you know, Robert Anton Wilson, his writing, Ayn Rand, this economic professor in India, these different people are talking about how here's the way it's going to be, and here we are. The Tea Party movement, just another extension of how dissatisfied people are with the government. It's the opposite direction. It's the opposite side of the whole Occupy movement. These people are more about conservative values, but they're talking about self-reliance. That's their main thing. Their message kind of gets muddled is the religious part of their message, where they want you to be self-reliant and self-defined, but not if it means that you're going to be, you know, having abortions, doing drugs, or selling your ass on the street for whoever wants to pay for sex. So this is where their whole self-reliance thing gets a little screwed up. But it's the same thing. That they're out there trying to get the government to wake up to the fact that they need to be acknowledged when it would be – if they just realize that they don't need the fucking government, they could just get on doing what they do.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. So what were we supposed to be talking about tonight?
We are supposed to talk – I mean, just what we're talking about right now, just the kind of stuff that – kind of indicators that the things we're talking about taking action, about getting ready for, you know, some sort of separation from the system, putting some distance between yourself and this system that's kind of falling apart, other indicators as to it actually going down, that we need to actually take some steps. We talked about, I think, a couple of weeks ago or a week ago about how there's an effort politically to make it illegal for you to sell food to others or give food to others that you produced yourself. Okay? I was wrong when I made that statement that it was going to be illegal for you to, you know, sell food to others or, you know, give food to others that you produced yourself. It's actually going to become illegal for you to grow your own food at all. Even
oh, wow.
Something. Okay? The bill is S-510, and it will make it illegal for you to grow your own food. It has to do with the World Trade Organization. The World Trade Organization wants you to, you know, wants to make sure that all food, and they're in the United States, is coming under Homeland Security. They want to make sure that all the food that you ever eat is safe, that everything you have is controlled, that you only have, you know, certain food resources, and these food resources are healthy and safe. Sounds all fine and good, but it means that you can't grow your own food. What's interesting is that the wording is you can't bring food into the United States, okay, from outside the United States. All right, that's the wording in the bill. But the bill goes on to define the United States as a corporate entity. Not as a landmass, not as a geographical territory, not as a sovereign nation. So as a corporate entity, anything outside that corporate entity's defined processes for growing and producing food is bringing food outside the United States. So, yes, your garden where you would be growing your own food would be, by the bill, S-510, illegal. It would be considered unsafe for yourself and your children. And it would be irresponsible for the society to allow you to have it.
Wow. Why would it be irresponsible? I'm trying to wrap my head around the logic that they have going there.
Yeah, the thought process is you can't grow your own food and be responsible for your own safety. So we have to come in and make sure that you're safe. Therefore, we're going to make it so that the only way you get food is food that we deem is safe and beneficial to you. You can't get it yourself.
Nice.
You can't grow it yourself. Right. And we've talked about this in other places. When you start controlling those basic needs, When you start controlling the things in the first two tiers of Maslow's hierarchy of need, food, shelter, those kinds of things, well, then you take control of the people. You take control, you know, you got us by the balls. When the only way we eat is when we obey.
Right. I mean, wow. I mean, next steps, make sure to take your soma.
Right. Or take your grandmother down to the take your grandmother downtown to be processed for Soylent Green. Exactly.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's gonna be the brave new world, man. It's where we're headed. So
I would say, I mean, you know, it's almost coming a point where it's gonna be too late if people don't just. I mean, I hate to say it, but people have got to start transgressing, man. You got to start just doing things. You know, the gloves have got to come off.
Right. People need to start taking action. They need to start, it's getting to the point where it's not even just a matter of preparing anymore, but it's a matter of, you know, yeah, it's almost to the point where if they're going to make everything a crime, well, then you have to start thinking, getting over the idea that you are a law-abiding citizen and wrapping your head around the idea that you're probably going to be a criminal.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's precisely it. You might as well start roughening up the edges now, man. It's coming that way, you know. But I mean, fuck. We know how the world exists inside of a corporation. Imagine the whole company as a corporation. I mean, the whole country,
right.
Whole company. Same thing. Yeah.
Right. Well, in a lot of ways, that's how we're seen now. Each and every person is a resource that is owned by the United States government and, you know, to be used as the United States government sees fit. That's how we're viewed now in a lot of ways, where your individual identity, your individual needs, your aspirations, your desires, your dreams are meaningless. It's what is it you can produce or how much can you consume? You know, what good are you for the system itself?
Holy shit. Yeah. Almost makes you want to kick Leonard Nimoy in the nuts for saying, you know, that whole bit about the good of the many outweighs the good of the one.
Well, you know what? If this is the thing, though, okay? If it were the good of the many outweighed the good of the one, I could be on board, okay? But when you talk about the good of the many not outweighing an elite group who are making the decisions for the many, you know, when the good of the many doesn't outweigh the 1% of the people who are manipulating, you know, resources and things for their own benefits, you know, that's an entirely different situation altogether.
Yeah, I agree with you to a point, but at the bottom level perspective, it's still going to be, oh, I'm doing this for everybody else.
Right. Yeah, well, that's the thing. I think I said this maybe the last show or last Tuesday. My biggest issue is how it's half-assed. How it's, it'd be one thing if it were, here's your number, here's your work assignment, comrade, but then everything you need is going to be seen to. You know, versus, you know, or the other way would be, no, you're totally on your own, you know, and it's kill or be killed. You know, one way or the other would be better than what we have right now, which is you're a free individual, you're responsible for yourself, unless we need you to do this shit. And then if we need you to do this shit, well, that's what you have to do. And where's the line at? Where's the difference? Where, you know, well, today it's here, and tomorrow it's going to be someplace else. So today the thing you're doing as a responsible, self-determined individual will be illegal tomorrow.
Fucking crazy, man.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've been talking about this for several weeks now, a couple of months, I think, actually. Seems like it was just, the middle of July or something that we started actually on this subject. And I swear, every single Sunday night, I sit here and just shake my head the entire time we're talking. It's just this kind of conscious realization of how fucked we are, man. When I think about the fact that I see more people walking around now than I ever have before. They all seem to be like just wandering aimlessly. It doesn't seem like there's as many cars on the road. It doesn't seem like grocery stores are as busy as they used to be. And it makes me wonder, is it because everybody's up and moved out of here, or is it because nobody's eating anymore?
Well, no, you're actually, according to the numbers, according to the economic numbers, you're seeing the effect of this economy, that people aren't going out and spending like they used to spend. Part of it is because they just don't have it. And those that do have it don't want to give it up, don't want to let it go. You go to a local grocery store that used to be busy, people shopping, if you think about like Walmart, Walmart made its money not just a grocery store, a store where you could get everything in one trip. Well, now you're like, you know what, I can't afford to go to Walmart, so I'm going to go to Aldi's, or I'm going to go to Save-A-Lot, or I'm going to go to some other grocery store that, you know, used to be considered, you know, you just go, just, this is where the poor people shop. You're not going to get your clothes at Walmart anymore. You're going to get them at Goodwill, because that just makes sense. It's what you can afford. It's no longer about brand recognition. It's no longer about, having, this XYZ type food. It's whatever it is you can get to sustain you. So, and there are more people, I think, wandering around in the streets with nothing to do, which is, I guess, frightening in and of itself, that, how do we reach that point as human beings when, given, you don't have a job, you don't have a way to sustain yourself, and what are you going to do with your free time? Well, I'm going to walk around and just be. If you're doing that for your own enlightenment, if you're doing that to reach nirvana or whatever, well, fine. But if you're just wandering because you really can't think of anything else to fucking do, that's scary.
Yeah, it's very scary. There's an old expression, idle hands to the devil's deeds, man. And that's not good, man.
Well, that's why, and it's kind of good to see that this Occupy movement is starting to catch on, because it will give these, give some of these people something to do. It'll give them something to think about. Maybe they aren't catching Blog Talk Radio on Sunday nights and listening to the show, but maybe they'll go check out what's going on downtown at one of these big parties or whatever and get a little education on something and start having some sort of focus, some sort of direction with their energy that they're going to engage in.
Okay. And, thinking about this whole Occupy Wall Street thing, and I saw a picture posted on Facebook sometime earlier. It was actually from that protest, and there was a U.S. soldier dressed in his BDUs. Actually, it looked like combat gear. He's standing there, he's holding a cardboard sign, and on the sign it says, I've served my country twice now. The first time I didn't know who my enemy was.
Right on.
So
he's pointing out that he knows who his enemy is now.
Yes.
Right on.
Yes.
Heavy.
So I'm hoping that kind of mentality starts to catch on. I mean, it's enough right now, I guess, just to realize, where we're getting fucked at. You've known you're getting fucked. You're awful sore, but you're just not quite sure which direction that big fucking cock's coming from. Now you know.
right. Jeez, man.
Yeah, I know.
It's just going to get worse. And that's the thing that people, you think you're fucked now. No. He's just, you're just getting the tip rubbed around, That's what's going on now. It's only going to get worse. It's only going to go deeper. So,
okay.
Yeah. Other shit that's going on. What's up?
Oh, I said it's some shit, dude.
Well, and it's, I mean, if you look at kind of some of the things that are going on right now with natural disasters, it seems like every region of our nation right now has got some other little fucking thing going on. Whether you're here in Texas and you're suffering from a drought, or you're up in the Middle East and you got slammed by a hurricane, whether you're from Louisiana and you're still trying to get over, you know, Hurricane Katrina, every little fucking part of the country has got some issue. Joplin's got, you know, tornadoes and shit. And it's systematic or symptomatic of what we've been talking about, that you've got these people who have come to rely on certain systems. And when something like this, a natural disaster happens, these different systems go away. The normal systems they have that they rely upon, they go away. And then the government says, well, we've got these alternative systems, FEMA. And FEMA's going to come in and take care of you until your regular operating systems get back online. Well, FEMA doesn't have the adequate funds to do those kinds of things in so many different places at once. So the government response is inadequate. You're relying on the government to do this shit for you. The government response is inadequate. And then your knowledge on how to do these things for yourself is inadequate. So either all the way around, you're fucked. And I, you know, part of the thing we're talking about being fucked by somebody else, part of the thing I think is that we're fucking ourselves.
Oh, I agree with that entirely. I mean, 90% of why rape's painful is because people struggle.
Right.
You know, it's so, that mentality that, oh, I'm just going to, you know, try to wiggle over this way. And no, that's not it. You need to just, you know, get your damn hands loose or something. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Right, yeah. It's so, I mean, the things we're talking about now are, it's coming time where if you really consider yourself self-reliant, if you really consider yourself responsible for yourself, that if you really sit there and say that you're an individual, that you are, you define things for yourself, well, pretty soon it's going to be put up or shut up. It's going to be, you know, really be all these things that you say you are, or get in the bread lines with everybody else and hope the resources are there for you to have access to.
Hopefully the bread line gets shorter.
Right.
I mean,
right.
This could really, in a way, work out excellently. Those of us that are taking our time and studying, you know, to prepare ourselves, plotting our course, trying to be versatile, trying to, you know, determine what the outcome is going to be in the future and what they need to, you know, kind of have a heads up about, you know, we'll be okay. And in the end, it's just going to be a massive culling out of idiots. You know, all these people that, you know, you used to get pissed off in the grocery store because they're just plain fucking rude to stand in the middle of the aisle looking at, you know, which peanut butter has more transient fats, well, they're going to be starving off, eating each
right.
other or whatever. It's just it's just going to get bad for a little while. And,
right.
You know, you got to keep that in mind. But ultimately, we're doing ourselves a favor as a species, so.
Right, well, I think when you read Atlas Shrugged, I think Rand kind of actually suggests that with the end of the book, you know, where the people that saw what was going on and realized that they didn't want to be around when the ship sank, basically, that got away from it, and got their own shit together and just separated, just left the system, that they waited. They let the whole world stop, basically. They let it all break down completely. And that meant people died. That meant people starved to death. That meant people died from disease and everything else. And they waited. And they waited. And then when a sufficient amount of time had passed, that's when they went back out into the world. Because now it was going to be a matter of, we have the resources. We have the means to accomplish whatever it is we need to accomplish to help everyone else. And when we go out into the world to deal with these people, we're going to be dealing with the toughest of the lot. And we're going to be at the peak of the species, basically, is going to be out there. The people we're going to be dealing with out in the rest of the world, the ones who actually survive. So at least they have the will to survive. But, yeah, personally, I don't want to be amongst those people that have to, you know, wait for somebody to come in and do it for me. I want to be among the people that, you know, was able to do for themselves, and then after a certain period of time are able to go out into the world again and go, here's what we need to do.
Yeah. That's why I'm constantly focusing on my effort and trying to develop some kind of clan locally. You know, I realize it's going to take a small group to survive, but, you know, nothing can come bad of it except for maybe a little drama if I pick the wrong folks, but we'll quickly figure that out.
Right. Well, and that's kind of what I'm thinking about here, too, is that, you know, even if it's a matter of, you know, me and some of the guys here every month, once a month, we get together just to break bread together and talk shit and drink a few beers and talk about, you know, okay, so what are we doing? You know, what's the plan if all this goes down? You know, have we found a better place to go? Have we found, you know, where are other resources? I mean, kind of like we do here tonight. You know, every Sunday night we get together, we begin together talking about different strategies. Well, now it's time to talk about, you know, we talked all this out. We started down those paths. You know, we figured out, you know, hey, we need to have food stored up for, you know, for each household. We need to have water stored up. We need to have, you know, skills so that we don't have to rely on, you know, the electrical grid. We don't have to rely on these other things that we are able to do for ourselves. So now I think it's time. It's time to start talking to other people who are thinking the same way amongst our, you know, local friends. And if nothing else comes out of it, it's once a month I got together with my buddies, we talked some shit, we had some good times, and once a month it meant that I got to break bread with people that I actually care about. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
You know, and we felt better. We felt more secure because we knew that these three or four or five guys or whatever had my back and I had their backs. So I didn't have to worry about, you know, whatever was going on with the rest of the world, because these people would be, you know, would be there for me.
Right on. Right on. That's exactly what it's all about. You know, it's funny, and I guess movies are kind of a huge influence over me, but the other night I was sitting there and I was watching 300 and thinking to myself how much I really dig that fucking movie, and for all the many reasons, you know, the cinematography is perfect to me, the color palette that they use is just completely up my alley. You know, I like how the angles and everything are, but the story itself, for whatever reason, just kind of resonates really deeply in me. You know, the whole idea that, you know, these 300 went out to show what, you know, X number more people of that same, you know, 300 Spartans, you know, they did this much damage to the Persian Empire. What is 10,000 Spartans going to do? You know, that kind of thing. You know, to me, that kind of thing is novel. And I mean, I don't really consider it to be a martyrdom. I mean, obviously, the end goal of it is to come out alive if possible. But, you know, if you meet a quick end on the battlefield, you know, then welcome it.
Well, if you were doing what you chose to do, if your will is self-determined, then it doesn't matter if you live a long life or a short life. You actually live. And 300, I think, is a good example of kind of what we're talking about. I mean, these guys are a military unit, so they, you know, they live by living under a certain set of orders, a certain set of rules, and everything else. But also, they're self-determined. It's the life they chose for themselves. And they see to their perfection of whatever it is they do. There was competition between those warriors, you know, at least through that film. And these people, you know, they tried their best to be the best at what it was they're doing, but also it was for the benefit of everybody around them. Another movie that I look to kind of along the same lines is The Last Samurai. the captain is a captive in the village, in the samurai village, and he talks about how every person there, from the people in the rice fields all the way to, you know, the leader of the samurai rebellion himself, were all dedicated to perfecting their own skills, shining as an individual, being self-determined, but also to one another. They recognized that they were all a link in a chain. Every link in the chain is individual, has its own individual strengths, has its own individual properties, but it's the chain that makes them truly strong. So, you know, there's nothing unsatanic, I guess. As we're talking about Satan, it's unsatanic in the idea of being part of a unit, being part of a collaborative, mutually beneficial effort. But it takes, you know, every individual in that unit being willing to do whatever it takes to make sure that they are as good as they can possibly be, that they do whatever it is they do to the best of their abilities.
Right on. And I think that that's something that should be developed in unison with actually seeking out others of complementary nature. So, you know,
right. Yeah, they can't just share your ideology. They can't just share in your goals. They have to share in your caliber as well. They have to match you on in what it is they're doing for themselves.
Precisely. And then from that, you both learn to draw from the strengths of the other. You know, because
right.
Obviously, you know, even you and I as artists, we both have a different aim when we're going towards our end products. So, you know, I learn from stuff you put out, and I'm assuming that it's probably the same for you.
Oh, absolutely.
I love the lifting of the caliber. So.
Right, and that's what you get when you get a group of people together, who are all working or striving to perfect themselves, to be as good as possible. Well, all that happens then is that when you're around other people who are like that, you just make one another get better. You push one another to achieve more. You don't, you know, you avoid complacency when you're, you know, in competition with people, and you're also reliant on those other people for your own needs, for your own benefits.
And reliance isn't... It should be stressed that reliance isn't dependency.
Right, I guess, yeah, reliance probably isn't the best possible word, but that you recognize that you are stronger as a part of that unit. So it's in your best interest, your best self-interest, to make sure that that unit is strong in and of itself, because you're stronger with that unit than you are by yourself. Now, by yourself, you may be sufficient. You may even do well. But as part of that unit, it's easier for you to be yourself, and that you have more opportunities, more strength than you would just as an individual.
Right on, man. So 40 minutes left to go. I think we should throw out the call in numbers, 347-989-1371. If you've... you know, got any thoughts on what we've been discussing every Sunday, it would be great to hear them. If you've got something new and interesting you want to talk about, that would be fine as well. In the meantime, I've got to ask, you know, have you finished your eBay sales and stuff yet?
I actually, I've got a couple of things to ship out tomorrow. And then what I do is I put the stuff up every week, and then I take it to the post office every Monday. So every Monday I've been going to the post office with a military duffel bag full of boxes and packages and just shit, man, just all this stuff, thinning it out. I decided that I'm taking a Monday off from that trip out to the post office. And so I didn't list anything else, but I'm getting ready. I'm gathering stuff up. I'm still doing the eBay sales thing. So gathering more stuff up today and tomorrow to put on eBay for next week. Now, so the auctions will actually end next Monday, and it won't be until the following Monday that I actually have to go to the post office, which is how I end up with a day off. I'm getting down to the nitty gritty. I'm getting down to just the stuff that I need for, you know, doing whatever I do as a tattoo artist, doing what I do as an artist. The DVDs that I absolutely refuse to let go of, even if they'll be completely worthless if there's no fucking electricity, you know, those kinds of things. It's been enlightening. It's invigorating to suddenly have more space, to have less baggage, less shit that I have to worry about if we, you know, if something happened, we had to get the hell out of here. And of course the extra income has been nice as well. You know, we go out and do shit. It's kind of weird sometimes sitting around because, you know, when you're doing tattoos and everything else, your income is not steady. So when you're sitting there looking at your bills and everything else and going, you know, fuck man, how am I going to, what do I got to do to make this, to pay this bill? And in the meantime, you've got shelves full of shit. You've got, you know, boxes and closets full of stuff that, well, it seemed really important when I bought it at the time, but not so much. So freeing that extra income up has been helpful, has been great. So now the kick is trying to actually leak into the whole stream of things that I'm selling, stuff that I produce myself. You know, not just the stuff I bought and now I'm getting rid of, but, you know, prints of artwork and tattoo flash that I've done, sticker packs and stuff like that, you know, slowly, you know, feeding these into the process and seeing how those do in the eBay auctions as well. Because every auction I do advertises the other auctions that I'm doing at the time.
Right on. So it's all kind of linked together. That's excellent. You get a little bit of exposure for things that you typically would retail. That's excellent.
Right. Well, hopefully that's how it works out.
Right on, man. Right on. I'm getting ready tomorrow to start doing some upgrades and stuff to my transportation to ensure that it's going to last me. And one of the things that I've actually been batting back and forth about and trying to figure out how to do it, I think to a certain extent, it might not be such a bad idea to actually begin to store combustible fuel as well. I'm just not certain how long I can store it and what conditions it needs to be kept in. I highly doubt that those, you know, little plastic jugs that you get will really keep it good for any real length of time, and it would be kind of retarded to, you know, buy fuel if it's just going to go bad at the end. But ultimately, that's something I've been exploring, is actually keeping a back supply of fuel, because I think that's one of the first things that we're going to see disappear all of a sudden.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
and from what I understand with gasoline, if you're going to store gasoline, that the issue is getting contaminants into those containers, mainly water. They have to be concerned about, you know, condensation in those cans. Let's see here. I've jumped on a site here real quick that talks about it, about how gasoline does degrade or become stale during storage. Let's see here. The recommendation is to take old gasoline to an approved disposal facility after at most 2 years of storage.
At most 2 years of storage. So, well, that's
right.
Not bad. I mean, I guess at that point, you just every year would make sure to use the old gasoline and replace it.
Right. Well, I think that's something else, is that if you're, and if you, the reading Wallace through these notes and everything else, it talks about how that's the recommendation of the American Petroleum Institute, is that you store gas for more than 2 years at a time. But there's some people saying here that you only want to go a year. That if you purchase gas in the spring, you want to make sure that you've used all the gas by next spring. But then I guess that can be one of those things where, you know what, when you're buying gas, you want to try to buy it as cheaply as possible. And that way, when the price goes up a year from now, well, you're still, you know, if the price of a gallon right now is $3.19 or whatever it is, I know it's different in other places and everything else, but, you know, that means that if over the course of the year it goes up to $3.54, $4.50 or whatever, well, you're still paying $3.19 because that's what you bought it at.
Right, right. As long as you're using it at that level, yeah.
Right.
Ultimately, I think it's an excellent idea for people to keep back up fuel, especially as I think we'll start to see dry spells of it. I really do. I think that's part of the problem that we have going on, is that all of that unrest that's happening over in the Middle East, which is primarily where we purchase our fuel from, that there's nobody actually able to consistently work at these places. I mean, I can't figure out any other reason why the price is being kept so high. You know, the actual trade of the barrel is not that expensive in comparison to what it has been in previous years.
Right.
So that leads me to, the people who actually play the market, if I can use that term kind of tongue-in-cheek, that they assume that there's not a consistent production happening or something along those lines.
Well, it's always been interesting about the production of petroleum is that, you know, they're usually the people who are producing it, OPEC and things like that, they usually produce more than they can possibly ever use, more than they could possibly ever sell. So they control production. You know, they reduce the amount of production going on. They reduce the amount of petroleum they're actually putting into the market. And that way they keep the price up to where it's at. You're right. The price of a barrel of gas has gone down significantly, especially in recent months. But it doesn't seem to be having any impact on the pump, and it's really because of speculation. So I think you're dead on with that. I think, though, you know what, if you could find a way, I look at all these other these great stories that you hear, people who use different means of fueling an engine or getting an engine to run. My favorite, of course, is this guy who modified his car engine and everything else so that it runs on hemp. So he's got a car that runs on pot. So that, you know, he'll be able to grow and produce his own fuel, and plus all the other benefits of hemp, which are awesome.
Right on.
So yeah.
I think one of the reasons why I myself still interested in gasoline as the combustible fuel is that it seems to have a longer shelf life than, say, corn oil or peanut oil or something like that. That stuff actually will lose its combustible properties after a certain time.
Right. And with the gasoline, the simpler the engine that you're fueling, the longer the shelf life of that gasoline, because, you know, the less bullshit the engine has to deal with. So if you're going from you're talking about a small engine. I'm trying to think of the type of vans that used to have these little tiny engines. A VW van is a type that comes to mind, but I think Mercedes made one as well. I mean, this engine is basically no bigger than a lawnmower on this van or whatever. Well, then you get the most out of your gas, the shelf life out of your gas because you have to think about along those lines too to make sure that the devices you want to fuel will take even, you know, gas that's been on a shelf 3 or 4 years.
Right on.
And of course, well, and then the other thing is that, I mean, if the shit were really to hit the fan, I mean, just really go nuts, I'd want enough gas to get to whatever distant point away from every fucking thing that I want to get to, and then maybe have enough to power a generator for a while. You know what I mean? And then it would just be a matter of, okay, we're enough to, you know, we're building our shelter out here, and going to grow our food or hunt or whatever it is we're doing, fish or whatever it is we're doing. And, you know, if we never have gas again, fuck it. And then, of course, you know, you send people out to get gas too. I think there'll be, despite the issues with there being a shortage of gas or whatever, there are going to be plenty of abandoned vehicles or whatever. They're going to have gas in them.
Right. I would agree with that, certainly. I don't think we're looking at a real long time frame for any of this either, man. I see this this next year is going to be absolutely pivotal. This next year, shit's just going to totally really hit the snowballing phase. So.
Oh, yeah. And you can see this kind of go on artificially, too. I mean, like you're saying, the price of gas is going. And this is, I guess, this is something else that people need to think about with the price of gas. The price we pay here in the United States, $3.19, $4.19, whatever it is, it is kept artificially low here in the United States due to our agreements with OPEC, because in the rest of the world, like England and Australia and everything else, they're paying comparatively $8, $9, $10 a gallon and have been for years. And it's simply because here in the United States, we've been the largest buyer of fuel. So we are able to go, you know, when you're going to sell a barrel of fuel or whatever, we're not buying a barrel of fuel at $150, $200. We're buying it at $100, or you don't get a piece of our market. And part of that was because we had our own market. We had our own access to fuel. I mean, you got these there's talk right now about running a pipeline from Canada to Texas. And of course, the environmentalists are coming out and going, no, you can't do that. We'll have this fuel, we'll have this oil spill, just like the BP oil spill in the Gulf. We'll have it on dry land. And I keep thinking, well, wait a second, aren't there already pipelines running from Canada into the United States? I mean, doesn't the Alaskan pipeline run that distance? You know, has there been an issue with those pipelines? It's bullshit. And I think it's going to be artificially inflated, just like you're kind of saying. I think there's a political urge to reduce not our dependency on fossil fuels, not our dependency on foreign oils, but on our ability to travel, on our ability to move about freely. That another thing that they want to, you know, another way of controlling the population is making sure that, hey, if you want to get around, you can only get around as far as you can pedal a bicycle or ride a horse.
Yeah, I mean, people were easier to control back then.
Right. Well, yeah, and if you're trying to control, if your population is on foot, on a bicycle, or on a horse, and you've got motorcycles, cars, tanks, and helicopters, well then, you know, you're years ahead of the general population. It makes it much easier to control people.
Right. I mean, that kind of shit really concerns me greatly, man. That's why I think everybody should have some kind of, small motorcycle or something like that, just kind of setting on the side, you know, I mean, keep the fuels empty out of it or use it, shit. You know,
right.
Even at that, keep it maintained, keep the amount of fuel that you're used to consuming down, but, you know, store enough that if you needed to make a long trip to somewhere to get to, I don't know, relief of some sort, that you would have enough fuel to get there.
Right, kind of have that emergency, yeah, if the shit hits the fan, how much gas do I need to get to this point? And then making sure that gas is sitting in your garage or sitting in a closet or sitting someplace where you can access it and put it in your car and take off. So while everybody else is trying to figure out how the fuck they're going to get fuel out of the gas station, you're gone.
Right.
And I think that's a lot of what we're talking about is, you know, making sure that when the shit hits the fan, you're not running to the grocery store trying to, you know, and this always blows my mind. You know, the hurricane's coming, the storm's coming, the blizzard's coming, the snow's coming or whatever. And there's a run on the grocery store for shit that, you know, you need. Why didn't you have that shit in your closet already? You know there's going to be a hurricane coming. You know there's going to be a blizzard coming. If you live in one of these areas that are prone to these kinds of natural disasters and natural events, why would you not have already prepared for that? It just blows my mind.
I mean, I think that's the Boy Scout you talking, but I agree, man. Be prepared.
Right on. And I wanted to address a point that was made in the chat room about what about getting gold and hoarding as a future currency in case of an apocalyptic situation. The issue with hoarding gold, first of all, gold has, as far as a value, as far as its dollar value is concerned, has increased dramatically. Back in the 80s when it was $300 an ounce or whatever, I mean, think about that. If you bought an ounce of gold, $300 in the 80s, well, today, if you still have the same ounce of gold, it's worth between $1,500 and $1,700. So it was a huge investment as far as dollars and cents in the current system are concerned. But if we're talking about, you know, let's say that system goes away. Let's say the paper that you're, you know, basing the value of that gold on becomes worthless tomorrow. Well, then it doesn't matter how much the stock market says the gold is worth. It's just a matter of what is it worth to somebody who will trade for it, that gold. So that lump of metal that you have to question whether or not carrying around that rock to whatever, or those coins or whatever you're going to do with them, I mean, you're going to be taking that gold that you spent who knows what, you know, $1,700, $1,800 on, you know, per ounce today. You're going to be taking that gold, and then, you know, a gold coin, an ounce of gold, is going to get you a loaf of bread. It's going to get you, you know, what? What is it going to get you in a world where the dollar has died? I mean, that's the watershed thing that they're talking about, that gold as a currency has been a currency for thousands and thousands of years. Well, absolutely. But we're talking about a world tomorrow where, you know, the dollar is dead, and it's just a matter of I've got it and you don't, and what do you have to trade for it? Well, I've got gold. Well, gold's not going to be something I can eat. Gold's not something I can burn in a fireplace. Gold doesn't do shit for me. You know, so, no, I don't think I'm going to trade my bread for your gold. There'll be people who will. Absolutely will do that. But I just don't see the majority of people who don't have access to gold right now. I mean, if you think about it that way, the only people who value, really truly value gold are people who have access to gold as it is now. Those of us who have no access to gold whatsoever, we shouldn't even be thinking about that. We should be thinking about, you know, what is it that I do have access to that it's actually worth a fucking damn? And, you know, that's bread. That's, you know, pot. That's fuel. That's water. That's food. Things like that. Things that are actually worth shit.
Right on, man. Right on. You know, being able to make a coat is worth more than a pound of gold in a fucking snowstorm.
Right, right. Yeah, having that. If I've got a garbage can sitting outside on the porch right now that's full of sticks. It's just your tree branches that have fallen off trees and shit like that, all dried out. And it's crazy. When I moved to Texas. When I lived in Indiana, I lived in an apartment, and my apartment in Indiana, we didn't have a fireplace. You know, rarely did you find an apartment in Indiana that had a fireplace. That just didn't make any sense that you'd have a fireplace in your apartment. The houses had fireplaces maybe, but not apartments. We get down here to Texas, and every apartment I looked at had has a fireplace. It's crazy. So, and we would, you know, I mean, I live in an apartment, so it's not like I got a bunch of trees around that I could chop down or shit like that. Well, we would actually, you know, you'd buy the firewood. You'd buy it from, you know, from Walmart or whatever. Walmart sells firewood and shit. And it just occurred to me, you know, I'm not, and this was months ago, but I got, you know, there's twigs and shit all over the place that I could bundle together with twine or whatever and burn that just as easily as the firewood that I was buying from Walmart or what have you. At the very least, make it easier for me to start my fires and stuff like that. So, you know, and I have children, and children are slave labor, so out they went into the yard and everything else, and they gathered up as many sticks and twigs and everything else they could find, and now I got this barrel full of firewood, basically. And thinking about this, all my neighbors, all these neighboring apartment buildings, whatever, they all have fireplaces. Well, if this winter, if for some reason, the shit were to hit the fan, well, then I could pass out bundles of twigs and trade those twigs or whatever for whatever it is they have that I might want that I don't already have. So it's a commodity that I have access to, and all it took was, you know, my putting my kids to work to gather the shit up.
Right on. Kids are good for something, huh?
Yeah, yeah. they weren't happy about it, but they took care of it. So, but yeah, I mean, it's, and I think it's this kind of thinking that we're moving towards, this kind of thinking of what is it that, you know, if everything were to stop, what is it I can do? What is it I have the ability to do on my own that will make a difference? Whether, you know, whether it's you took the time to gather fucking twigs for kindling, you took the time to save up water. The water main, actually, I talk about this in other shows. Our water main actually burst a couple of days ago again. And that the very next morning, I was able to, you know, get up. There's no water pressure in the pipes. Got up, did the dishes I needed to do, brushed my teeth, you know, was able to wash my hair and wash myself. You know, it was room temperature water, but I was able to continue to function comfortably because I had water stored. Whereas, you know, most of the people in the building, you know, I know they were bitching and complaining. They had no water. They had no way of doing the things that I was doing. So it was totally worthwhile.
Right on. So how many gallons are you storing at this point?
I'm going to say we're measuring in liters, and on average, a person needs 4 liters a day, okay? And that takes care of not just the water your body needs, but also anything you need for, you know, cleaning and everything else. So an average person uses 4 liters a day, apparently. And I think it's high because I don't think I go through 4 liters of water a day. But we're up to 5 days for my entire family in water that we have stored up.
What's that, about 15 gallons?
I don't know what it is in liters. And it's because I'm using 2-liter bottles for storage.
2 2-liter bottles is roughly, well, it's a little over a gallon of liquid.
That sounds right. So if we're talking about gallons, let me think about this. I'm trying to do the math in my head. I've got 4 days worth of water. A gallon a day, I think, is what you have to have, either a gallon or 2 gallons. If it's a gallon a day, there's 4 of us, 4 days, so 16 gallons, somewhere between 16 and 30 gallons of water.
Right on. That's a whole closet full of water, isn't it?
I've got one of the closets is full, and this is the other thing. When you're storing water, you've got to keep it dark. It's got to be someplace dark. For whatever reason, if the bottle is exposed to sunlight, over time the water degrades, something like that. That makes sense. It's going to boil. It's going to do different stuff. It's going to evaporate, things like that. So you got to keep it, you know, dark, even if it's capped off. There's water all over the apartment, not just in the pantry where we store most of the stuff, but actually, you know, in every closet, everywhere there's water. I made sure there's water in our car, so that, you know, even there, there's, you know, if you're someplace and you need water, there's water in the car and everything. So, it's available pretty much everywhere as far as the apartment's concerned.
Right on. Now, have you created any kind of homemade shower rig yet?
No, we haven't actually done that. We're like looking at camping equipment. We're looking at, I've got a tarp. I've got some, you know, some little camping gear here and there. I haven't gotten to a homemade shower. My big thing lately has been the go bag thing, you know, making sure that there's, you know, backpacks with whatever little things that each of us would need to take with us. So if we had to leave, we could just grab, you know, the backpacks and these couple of suitcases and we'd be out the door.
Right on, man. Hey, I was just curious. I know you're pretty persistent at things when you get your mind set to them, so I wanted to know what the progress was. Funny, I've got I mean, literally everything that I would take with me fits into three flat storage bins that go underneath the bed.
Yeah.
That's it. That's everything that I would need if I absolutely had to dump ship and get the fuck out.
I know that Jamie's been kind of she sees the necessity for it. She recognizes the impending danger, basically. But she's also been one to go, you know, if we're doing this, then we're acknowledging the risk. We're acknowledging that things are going bad. And she'd rather not acknowledge it in many ways. So, but she's gotten on board. She's purchased bottles of water, which it's a 2 liter from a soda bottle or whatever. I fill that fucking thing up. I'm not buying water from anybody. But she's purchased things of water. She's purchased, you know, food and everything else. We're still, we're getting the idea of storage, you know, storing food, canning and everything else for long term. So yeah, it's interesting. Learning something new every day.
Right on, man. I'm actually at this point, I have a kind of a Bowie knife, you know what I'm talking about, that it's one of many weapons that I have, but I've been fashioning some different things so that I can use it as a multiple-purpose hunting tool if necessary.
Right.
You know, spearing fish is much easier than casting out a rod.
Right on. Do you have like a K-bar?
Yeah, it's I'm trying to think of what you actually call it. It's a survival style knife. As it is right now, already has a little kit in it with matches and a strike stone and fucking needle and thread, fishing hook, that kind of thing.
Right on.
You know, it's one of those that you unscrew the bottom and there's actually a little compass inside of the bottom piece of it. Well, that threading for the screw-on part there actually happens to fit pretty well in a 3.5-inch bolt. So I'm working on creating something that'll have that 3.5-inch bolt, actually several things, so that I can change the tool as I need to without carrying a lot of extra weight to me. So.
Right on. For someone with a little bit of military experience, other than a K-bar, there's a utility tool. It folds up into almost a square. It's like a shovel head. It folds up, so imagine a shovel head, okay? It folds up into a shovel head shape. So that's about, you know, it's about maybe 6 or 7 inches wide and maybe 6 or 7 inches long. So you got this, and it just fits in this little plastic container. And when you unfold it, it's basically a miniature shovel. When it's unfolded completely, it's maybe 4 feet long. Okay, so you got the shovel handle and everything else. But it has a serrated edge on one edge of the shovel. It has an axe blade edge on the other edge of the shovel. It's basically an all-purpose tool for digging, cutting wood, shit like that. So, and they're relatively cheap. So, if you're interested in an all-purpose tool that is a little bit bigger than a Swiss Army knife, I want to say it's called a utility tool, but I'm not sure exactly what it is. And it's a basic piece of equipment at a military surplus store.
Right on. And I mean, I think that's certainly some things that people, you know, should be thinking about doing is making their tools as multiple purpose as possible.
Right.
I've also found that if you keep a set of tools that is specifically tailored to the things that you own and take the time to actually look at the way that they're constructed or built and learn about it, you know, that in the future also will make things easier.
Absolutely. Yeah, everything I read about.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, everything I've been reading about putting together, you know, survival kits and go bags and everything else, one of the key things is having tools to match the things that you're taking with you. Yeah, because if something breaks down on you and you don't have the tool to fix it, well, then whatever you've been carrying around with you becomes worthless. So it's always a good idea to have specific screwdrivers, specific wrenches, specific, you know, tools to repair the things that you take with you, whether it's a bicycle, a generator for, you know, a fuel-based generator, your car, whatever it is. Make sure you have the tools to repair it.
Right on, man. Well, we got about 9.5 minutes left. Trying to think if there's anything else really to touch on this tonight without going in a completely different direction. I can't really think of anything. I did take note that It's About Time article has 20-plus comments on it at this point in time.
Yeah, that Alex character and I are going back and forth. I really think it's just a difference in perspective. And I think he's also this. I don't know what's up with this, but it seems like he was kind of reading into some of the statements I was making. Like, I was talking specifically about awareness of time as a motivator, and he talked about time itself as a motivator. So there were some. It's interesting to see if he has this interpretation of the discussion, then he has a winning argument. But if that interpretation of the discussion is incorrect, well, then his argument falls apart. So the effort he made to sway the interpretation, to interject certain language into the discussion, it was interesting. It was an interesting exercise trying to be consistent and to go, no, this is, I didn't say that. This is not what we're talking about. It's, we're talking about this, and trying to bring it back online. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I've noticed lately people are having a considerable amount of difficulty staying on point when discoursing an idea. It seems like everybody wants to kind of tackle, you know, the symptoms instead of actually dealing with the actual sickness of whatever they're talking about. I'm not quite sure, and I'm kind of speculating that this might actually be an indicator that people are chasing the lower levels of that Maslow's proposed hierarchy of need, and they're not able to focus as well.
Right, right. Yeah, and I think this guy, it's probably exactly what you're saying, that this guy's, you know, there was some need for validation, I think. I don't know the cat. I don't know what his motivations are or whatever. But it was just kind of weird, you know. At one point he even contradicted himself in his comments. You know, he went from saying that, you know, that the fear was the reason that we're not aware of time is rooted in fear, to awareness of time being rooted in fear also. So it was kind of I called him out on that. Which way is it? And I don't think he ever got around to responding to that. But yeah, I don't know what's going on with that cat.
Yeah, it's just funny, man. I'm glad to see though that people are coming to exchange on eminentmind.info. This last week has been very successful. To date, that article, It's About Time, is the most popular. I think that's great. It's really cool that there's a few people out there that are, really thinking about this shit, even if they're coming at it from a different perspective than we are. I'm just hoping that ultimately, might is right, you know?
Right, right. And it would be cool if it would be, if more than just commenting happened, you know, if we actually start getting people approaching us with their blogs, with their own ideas. I know with Afsara Kamali, part of what we've been doing, and this helps promote everybody with what she's doing and everything else, you know, putting her blog, one of her blog posts on our blog and directing traffic to her. But she's kind of gone the same way. I don't think she's actually posted anything from Eminent Mind on her blog as of yet, but we're mentioned. It's interesting to see, and this is where I think it's also cool where it's more philosophy. Where it's more, you know, having the proper mental attitude versus application. A lot of that's being discussed on, you know, and not just on Eminent Mind, but other blogs as well. But yeah, I mean, it was interesting to see all of a sudden there's this, you know, traffic boost on Eminent Mind and a real, you know, debate going on. It would be cool if the guy actually steps up and writes a blog maybe about his point of view so that the discussion could continue.
Right on, man. Right on. So what's going on in the wonderful world of tattooing?
Just the usual shit. I posted a blog on Distorted Brainwaves about how I get this text message from somebody that wants to know if I do tattoos, wants to know if my name's Frank. And kind of go back and forth with them. No, my name's not Frank. I finally end the conversation. Look, my name's Jason. I told you this a message ago. Were you calling about it or were you texting me about a tattoo? And 2 days later, I get a text message. You know, they're wanting to get a tattoo. They send me a picture of what they want. They tell me the size and everything of the tattoo. And when I tell them what I would charge, which I thought was, you know, a reasonable price, never mind. And I said, okay, you know, I gave them the opportunity. Well, what is it that you want to charge? What is a reasonable price? And, of course, you know, there was no response. So it became fodder for my blog.
Of course.
I've done a couple of interesting tattoos. I had a lady come in, and she wanted to get a phrase in this particular font tattooed on her arm, but what she wanted to do was have it start in a red tone, a dark red tone, and work its way to a bright yellow tone. So it was like this, you know, flame that moved from, you know, one point on her arm, dark red, through orange to yellow. So that was fun. That was something different that I hadn't had an opportunity to really do, except for, you know, I guess the phoenix that I did on that girl's rib cage was something, you know, along those lines.
Right on.
The tattoo, I touched up a tattoo today that was this this chick is a track star at UT. She's actually a contender for the Olympics in track. And her she had this tattoo of Africa on her arm, and she wanted this tribal design to go around it. So designed a tribal design. So this design was something that I designed, and then we tattooed it not in black, but actually in an off red. And I have a tattoo on my arm that has the same off red on it. It's a mix of red and gray wash, and she really dug it. So we used the same, you know, the same color for this tribal design. So it almost has a look of a henna tattoo design.
Right on.
But it's permanent. And then she got some phrase in French written on her arm as well today. Other than, you know, the usual little bullshit, the names and everything else and stuff like that, I haven't had the opportunity to do a really cool tattoo in a while, and I got an idea now. Ken Tabor has been asking about a tattoo for a while now. I drew a design for him. He wasn't as into the design as I thought he would be or whatever, even though it was based on his exact specifications. So I've been tooling around different designs. It's all been variations on that same theme, and I just haven't been happy with them. And I wanted to be a big deal. So I've come up with another idea, and I'm working on getting it all down on paper and everything else so I can actually send it to him and see what he thinks. So I'm hoping to have that done and completed within the next week. So that's the next big project.
Right on.
Yeah, I got a floral quarter sleeve that I'm doing later on this week, and that'll be fun. So, yeah, just keeping busy.
Cool. Right on. Well, looks like there's about a minute left here, dude.
All right. Cool, man.
All right. So I'll roll the outro, and we'll talk to everybody next week.
All right. Yeah, talk to you next week. Later.
Later.
Thank you for listening to the Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but it's the old expression goes. Special thanks to Dad, the Rocky Aroma, for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is the Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official Blog Talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?